This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Steinway & Sons is a proud sponsor of Between the Keys featuring Jed Distler. To learn more about Steinway & Sons, maker of handcrafted pianos since 1853, visit www.steinway.com. This is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network. 40 years ago, on January 26th, 1977, the Australian-born pianist Bruce Hungerford was killed in a tragic automobile collision in New York City caused by a drunk driver. He was 54 years old and at the height of his artistry. Bruce Hungerford had moved from Europe to New York, where he had begun a long and fruitful association with the Vanguard record label, for whom he recorded music by Brahms, Chopin, Schubert, and Beethoven. Hungerford was in the process of recording all 32 Beethoven sonatas for Vanguard, and only had 10 more to go at the time of his death. Bruce Hungerford has been gaining more and more recognition as one of the most distinctive keyboard stylists of his era, who brought a high degree of mindful virtuosity and cultivation to his interpretations. One man who has done quite a lot to keep Hungerford's artistic legacy alive for new generations of music lovers is my guest on Between the Keys. Donald Eisler is a marvelous pianist and recording artist in his own right. He's an educator, and he was a longtime student of Bruce Hungerford, and I am very pleased that Bruce Hungerford's legacy brings Donald Eisler to Between the Keys. Don, welcome. I'm so happy you're here.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted that you're doing a program about Bruce Hungerford, and I'm happy to work with you on it. Pleasure.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you were 6 years old when you first started studying with Bruce Hungerford?
Oh, no.
That's an urban myth.
I knew him because actually...
Tell me how
he lived most of his adult life in America. He came here age 23, right after World War II ended, to study at Juilliard. He was here until about 1958. In 1957, he did an Australian tour, which is the only time he went back to his native country came here. He was otherwise here from 45 until 58. Then he moved to Europe, and then in 67, he came back and spent his remaining years here.
I see.
My father, who was a wonderful amateur pianist, met him shortly after he arrived here in 1945. Interestingly, he said that the first time he ever heard Bruce, whose name was then Leonard, playing was at a concert at a church in Manhattan, and part of the program included the Liszt Sixth Hungarian Rhapsody, which is not exactly the repertoire that he was known for. So they were in touch for some years, then they lost contact, then they regained contact in the 50s, and I remember seeing him at least a few times as a child before he went to Europe. Mm-hmm. But I only studied with him in the 60s and the 70s in my last year of high school, and then after I finished my master's degree at Manhattan School of Music. Well, he was an unusual individual. He lived a somewhat solitary existence. He practiced. He had interests in unusual things. To me, Egyptology, photography, paleontology, and he almost got in trouble once with that because he was on a dig near a state penitentiary. He had to explain his way out of that.
Oh, my. So he was digging into the prison?
Not intentionally. He didn't realize he was near a prison. But anyway, that got into a newspaper in Connecticut, I think. This is before he went to Europe. He was just such a brilliant player. Whenever he played, it sounded like a finished work of art, whatever it was. I mean, there could be a few wrong notes, but the level of playing and the level of thinking was just so impressive at all times.
I'd like to start with the music of Beethoven, and this is a recording, Donald, that we both like very much. This is the C major sonata, opus 53, the Waldstein Sonata. And this performance of the first movement, I mean, the tempo is super fast, yet it's never breakneck, and it's fantastically controlled. And you were telling me something about the recording session for the Waldstein.
Well, he was in the process of recording all of these sonatas, which unfortunately didn't get to finish. And one of the great sad things that he never got to do is he never recorded, just to go off to the side for a minute, he never recorded the Hammerklavier, although it was found on his music rack after the accident. He had been practicing it. But as far as Waldstein, yes, he recorded it, and then he was not happy with it, so he insisted that Vanguard give him a whole bunch of new sessions to redo it at a faster tempo, and it was incredibly exciting.
Let's listen.
Thank you.
That was the first movement from Beethoven's Waldstein Sonata, Sonata number 21 in C major, opus 53, with pianist Bruce Hungerford. And I am sitting here with pianist Donald Eisler, who was fortunate enough to study with Bruce Hungerford, who is also a family friend. So, Don, for those who may not be so familiar with Bruce Hungerford, maybe you can tell us a bit about his background and his pedigree, who his main teachers were, for instance.
Well, he came from a small town called Currumburra, which was not that far from Melbourne in Australia. His first important teacher was a Cortot student named Hugh Shepherd.
We're talking about Alfred Cortot, the great French pianist.
That's right. Yes. And then he studied for a while before he came to America with Ignaz Friedman, who was also a big influence on him, although he would mention Cortot more often. He was very impressed with Cortot. And then he came here and he studied at Juilliard with Ernest Hutchison for a while.
Who also was Australian,
that's
I think.
Right.
Yes,
that's right. Interesting story was he was interested in Carl Friedberg. He was also interested in Arthur Schnabel because when he would talk about what you want to play like the great artists or learn from the great artists, he usually started mentioning Schnabel, Edwin Fischer, Alfred Cortot.
He was very close to Myra Hess, wasn't
and
he?
And also he knew Myra Hess very well. But he was going to audition for Schnabel, but then Schnabel was going to Europe for the summer, so he was told he could audition when he came back. But in the meantime, he was in touch with Carl Friedberg, and he ended up with Carl Friedberg and was very, very happy studying with
Carl Friedberg. One thing that was fascinating about Hungerford studying with Carl Friedberg is that he had the foresight to record his lessons. And this was something that was probably very unusual at the time, because to have your own tape recorder was not very common, I imagine.
Yeah, it was a kind of musical history. And in fact, I believe Alan Evans has released some of this on his recordings of some of these conversations, which are very interesting. And in fact, I think Hungerford to some extent was influenced by Friedberg's teaching, because Friedberg is talking of illusions or sound qualities or feelings and stuff and evoke something in a not exactly mysterious or mystical way about the music, but to get Hungerford to be able to play it that way. And that is sort of the way he worked too.
Interesting. I think also Bruce Hungerford's interest in things outside of music, in research, as you were saying, being a very accomplished Egyptologist, having this interest in research, in preserving things, I think that and maybe in a way that extends to wanting to preserve the lessons with this person who was associated with Brahms, that he would be getting something valuable from that. I wonder if there's a connection there.
It could be. Well, I think he probably thought of himself as being part of the continuum of history. And considering he didn't live that long, I'm glad that he did as much as he did. And it's a big thing that he recorded these lessons, especially since he was not particularly interested in the technology. I remember in his last years, I visited him in his studio. Somebody had installed a new stereo system, and it had Scotch tape over some of those buttons. I said, "What's that for?" So he doesn't mess things up. So that he, in the early 50s, got a tape recorder and recorded his lessons, I think is wonderful.
What was a typical piano lesson with Bruce Hungerford like, Donald?
It could be quite long. He certainly didn't believe in
watching
1 hour.
The clock.
No, the opposite. It would go on as long as he had something to say for it. An idea of how he tried to teach. You know, the middle section, the F major section of the slow movement of Opus 10, number 3. And it starts with these lowed Fs, which are going on. He said, "These Fs have been going on for eons, and you're just tuning into them."
is also interesting that for all of Bruce Hungerford's erudition and his incredibly multifaceted life and interests, didn't he live relatively simply?
The studio that he lived in for most of his last close to 10 years after he came back to America was a garage apartment, which was a few rooms over some garages on the estate of this very wealthy, these three elderly siblings who lived in the big house at the other end of the driveway. And it was very cramped and it was very crowded. But he was perfectly happy there. It was quiet. Nobody bothered him. He could practice in the middle of his night. In the middle of the night, his mother lived down the block in an apartment, and he spent part of the day there. There was a telephone. He had no telephone in the studio. He could just be at peace and do whatever he was working on.
How wonderful. I think you told me that you attended Hungerford's recording sessions.
Most of them from about, the sessions, I gather the early ones, I wrote an article about this a while ago, which I put on my Facebook page, which is called Eisler's Insights. They started in 1967 after he came back here and went on until 76, sometime not long before the accident, which was in January of 77. After 69 or 70, apparently it was okay for him to invite more people. So I was probably at all or most of his recording sessions after that.
How did he take to recording conditions? How did he approach the process?
He tried to do the best he could. I don't remember him complaining about anything. He was in this big room, and the rest of us were in the control room with the recording engineer looking through glass at him playing. He was willing to do things over and over as many times as necessary to get it as good as possible. Once he got quite frustrated, he was, I think it was the Andante Favori, which was originally going to be the slow movement of the Waldstein Sonata, and he kept having problems with the octaves in that. And he got so frustrated. He was very much an under-control person. He didn't yell or scream or outburst or anything like that.
Yes.
But this time he was really getting worked up. So he would say, "Damnation!" And then he'd call out the next take number without waiting for the recording engineer, and then he'd start to play. And this just went on for a while. Meanwhile, I was sitting in the control room with his other friends and his mother, who was perhaps then 85. He was in his early 50s by that point. She shook her head and she said, "I don't know where he learned such language." This is someone who would never swear or use bad language, so this was serious.
Damnation. Yes. I think we can say that on the radio, though.
I think it's okay.
Bruce Hungerford's teacher, Ignaz Friedman, was known for his very full-bodied, epic-scaled way with Chopin. And Bruce Hungerford recorded Chopin's B minor sonata, which I think is a very interesting recording because the playing is very controlled, yet it, to my ears, it's also very subjective and full of rubato, sometimes wildly so, and quite different from the kind of classical reserve that you heard in the Beethoven. So let's listen to the opening movement of the B minor sonata, number 3 of Chopin.
Thank you.
That was Chopin's B minor sonata, the first movement, played by Bruce Hungerford, a pianist who is our featured artist this hour, and we are celebrating his artistic legacy. My guest is Donald Eisler, a pianist, educator, writer. He's the founder of the CASP record label, K-A-S-P, and he has done quite a lot to preserve the legacy of Bruce Hungerford. I'd like to turn to some music of Schubert, who was a composer for whom Hungerford had a great affinity, and let's listen to the G-flat impromptu from the Deutsch 899 group, Bruce Hungerford. Thank you. We just heard Franz Schubert's G-flat impromptu, and that was recorded at a private concert in New York City in 1964, the pianist Bruce Hungerford. And my guest is Donald Eisler, who worked with Bruce Hungerford. The piano music of Richard Wagner is seldom performed. In fact, most of Wagner's works for the instrument date from his student years. But, Don, I want to ask you, how did Bruce Hungerford get involved with Wagner's music? What was the fascination?
Well, I wasn't in touch with him at this time. This was in the early to mid-60s. He lived in Germany then. He knew the Wagner family, and he taught master classes at Bayreuth, run by Friedlin Wagner, Wagner's granddaughter. And I don't know if he had the idea or they asked him to do it, but they did it. They had him make the first recording of the complete piano works of Wagner.
This is a recording, by the way, that's never been on CD. It was, I think it was a limited release on LP. It's not very easy to find. A friend of mine was kind enough to send me a digitized version made from a slightly scratchy LP vinyl copy, for which I apologize in advance. Yet, I'd like to share Bruce Hungerford's sensitive performance of an album leaf in F minor that Wagner composed in 1861. And unlike his youthful piano music, this piece better reflects the composer's maturity. Let's have a listen. Thank you. Album Leaf, composed in 1861 by Richard Wagner, one of his few and seldom performed piano pieces, from a vinyl recording on the Eterna label. The pianist was Bruce Hungerford. This is Jed Disler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and you are listening to Between the Keys. And this is a program celebrating the life and legacy of Bruce Hungerford. Donald Eisler, who studied with Hungerford, is my guest on this episode. And Don, I wanted to ask you about Bruce Hungerford's last concert, which, of course, no one ever expected it to be his last concert, and you have released this concert on CD. It's available on the CASP label, K-A-S-P. Tell me something about this.
Well,
how this
I actually
came about.
Heard this was recorded in Calgary, but I heard him play the same program a couple of weeks earlier at the Hudson River Museum in Yonkers, New York, where he often played. It has the Mozart A Major Sonata. It has a little march in C major by Mozart, and then Beethoven Opus 10, number 1, and the second half he played Opus 111, and then there are two encores of Chopin, Schubert Impromptu, excuse me, and the Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring.
The Myra Hess arrangement.
The Myra Hess arrangement. Mm-hmm. He actually did have one more performance after that, which was of the Beethoven 4th Piano Concerto with a student orchestra at a high school in New York City a few weeks before he died, after which he submitted to questions people wanted to ask him, one of which was, how long have you been playing the piano? You know, this is a great artist a few weeks before his untimely death. So there were, but he was a good sport. He always did the best he could.
Why don't we listen to the Rondo alla Turca from the Mozart A Major Sonata, Kürschel 331, because this is a work that Bruce Hungerford otherwise did not record. Is that right?
As far as I know, I believe I heard him play it in a house concert in 1964, but for some reason he didn't play very much Mozart. I don't know why. He was very good at it. There's also a recording he did in Germany. It's never been released publicly, of the last Mozart piano concerto. So he did play Mozart, but not very much. And this is very good. So
let's listen. Thank you. was the famous Rondo alla Turca from Mozart's Piano Sonata in A Major, Kerschel 331, with Bruce Hungerford, that was recorded at his last recital. His death must have been a great shock for you.
Well, I had a lesson the day before.
What were you working on? Do you remember?
I think that was when I played Opus 110, and thank heavens he liked it. So the last lesson...
Opus 110 of Beethoven, you mean, yes.
So that was a good feeling, and then I went home, and he went out, and he did some shoveling of the driveway of this residence where he lived, and then he went in to the city to give a lecture on ancient Egypt, and he and three other family members were killed in an auto accident caused by a drunk driver who was the only survivor of the accident on their way home.
Unbelievable. I think it just must have come to a shock, not just to you and your family and his family, but, you know...
It was very much a shock for my parents. My parents helped his family identify the bodies, and so there was a lot of involvement, and they started a foundation, my parents and several other friends, in his memory, which they ran for 25 years.
Before we play the Bach, Myra Hess, Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring, I'd like to ask you, Donald Eisler, who was Bruce Hungerford and what did he mean to you?
He was a very powerful personality, a guru type. You know, he was just very much an individual who went his own way. He was uncompromising in his standards, in his beliefs. He worked terribly hard. He was terribly serious. He expected you to do your best, too. Was not always hugely tactful when you weren't playing well, but he just said what he thought. It wasn't to be mean. He wanted you to do your best, too. I probably learned as much or more from music, about music from him than from anyone else. He was a huge personality. I think anybody who knew him personally would sort of understand what I'm talking about. And I'm sorry that it's so few people at this point, as he's been gone for 40 years already. He's probably the single most important musical influence on my life. He's certainly one of the big ones, perhaps number one.
Donald Eisler, thank you so much for sharing your memories of Bruce Hungerford and your insights into this very important and special artist. Thank you for being here. Music of Johann Sebastian Bach, Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring, arranged by Myra Hess and performed by Bruce Hungerford. And this is Jed Disler, artist in residence for the Classical Network. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you at this time next week. Between the Keys is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.